Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Look at this. What do I have here? I've got a pee cup.
Can oh, hallelujah. It?
Oh, my goodness. A pee cup. This guy has measuring tape around his neck.
Oh, sure.
As if though any woman that's going to come in there, he's going to immediately start wrapping that around. My guess is their throat. Yeah. We have every kind of bra. We have bra made from the skin of some of my victims.
Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Please be advised that Dr. Drew After Dark may contain sexually oriented content and be unsuitable for young children.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Phone number is 818-253-1693 for those voice messages and drdrewafterdark@gmail.com for the emails. We got plenty of all both today. But I don't know how much of that I'm going to get to because I have a great guest today. It is Tony Hinchcliffe. Tony, welcome as always.
Indeed. Good to be
this
here.
This is a big deal.
I love it.
It's a huge deal because whenever I interview a comedian or come upon someone that I think is just really fun and a great talent, they always, oh, it's part of that Kill Tony crowd. It's part of the Kill Tony world.
Yeah.
And I've been sort of really, that whole world has opened to me in the recent months.
Yeah.
And, you guys have had a huge influence on a lot of people.
Yeah, we're having a blast, yeah. Man. I mean, it's sort of its own wild universe because we get so many people on a single show that it's more like it's like if pro wrestling had its own podcast.
I saw one where everyone was dressed like medieval times.
Yep.
And there was a 8-piece orchestra.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, we had a 6-piece band last night when we taped an episode. I mean, and what's fun now is that when we have that giant band and things like that, it's unbelievable musicians.
Yeah.
In LA, we had a bunch of comedians, and very rarely did we have like actual professional musicians playing in the band. And now we literally have some of the best in the world here in Austin, which is the music capital. And so like anything can happen on the show. Everything's improvised. So if I can literally say, oh, you ever do karaoke? And they could say yes, and I can say what song, and if whatever they say, literally the band immediately is into it. So they're singing. Like, so it's just this extension of crazy art and stuff, different music, improvisation, obviously stand-up comedy, and so we have a lot of fun over
there.
Yeah,
you guys aren't as high as the Skanks.
No, we're not. We're not.
In fact, I've never seen a human smoke as much weed as those guys do. I've never seen that.
We're closely connected. Those are basically our New York cousins,
yes,
out there.
Yes.
And we smoke a bit, but yeah.
Not like that.
Right.
Lewis did about 7 dabs in 8 minutes while I was sitting there. I was like, dude, how are you? And they're just as fast as ever.
Right.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
Those are superhuman capacities.
They're wild out there in New York. Mass amount of jokes. They have that Dave Attell influence hanging over them.
Is that so what, like, it is?
I mean, he's...
I blame Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's him.
He's just amazing.
So let's talk about you a little bit. You grew up in Youngstown, Ohio,
yeah.
You told me. And
wild neighborhood,
yeah.
Wild situation. You would love, I mean, you would probably love my backstory. My mom and dad were never publicly together. Mm-hmm. They were, in fact, married to other people and cheated on their significant others for 11 years without people finding out about it.
Wow.
And then...
How did they do that? Did you ever...
Tricky. Sneaky.
Who were you raised by?
My mom.
Did you ever ask her, like...
I mean, he would just say that he was doing something else while his wife raised his 2 kids at his house. And my mom had 4 kids before me.
Of his?
No, of her husband's.
Ah!
Right. So 4 kids at my mom's house, 2 kids at my dad's house. And they're banging, you know, a few times a week or whatever. And after 11 years of this thing being a secret, my mom gets pregnant. In a stunning turn of events, at the age of 38, 12 years after her last kid was born. So, luckily she had the baby. It was me. And
a career in comedy was born.
Yeah, exactly.
kid's got to be funny or else.
Yeah.
So did they come clean at that point or what?
No. What's interesting is they kept it a super secret.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Had your mom separated from the other kid's dad yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So she could keep it a secret.
Right.
Did that dad know about you?
Yes, because
did he want to call up the dude and go?
No, he wasn't like that. He was a heavy drinker, so he was like just sort of out. He was checked out. He was such a heavy drinker that at that point they hadn't had sex in like years.
Got it.
So when she started showing signs of pregnancy, he's like, I think this is, you know, I think they were putting a ribbon on this one.
Wow. So it was the pregnancy that ended it.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Ended it all the way. But again, you know, in Youngstown back then, it was
just the way we did it.
Right.
Just...
It was Italians who, you know, that happens. They have their, you know, Fridays for the wives, Saturdays for the girlfriends types of things.
Are you a Stern Show fan?
Old school. Yeah. Yeah. Old time.
So yep. Sal's dad seemed to have had a similar flair to both of the, well, at least your.
I don't remember that exact story. But
his dad had lots of girlfriends and lots of kids all over the place.
Yeah.
Italian.
Right.
Sicilian, I think, even. Isn't that more of a Sicilian thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that your brand of Italian?
Yeah. And the thing is we have heard since then that he might have one or two more out there somewhere. So, yeah, it's just like that. But what's really interesting is because they wanted to keep it a secret, I didn't when I was a little kid. Like, my mom told me, you know, don't ever tell anybody. Well, first of all, she told me that my dad was a truck driver and he only gets to visit so often when I was a tiny, tiny little boy.
Okay.
So I was always excited to see him. Like, when I'd see him once a week or whatever, we'd have, you know, spaghetti on Sundays for 2 hours and then he'd be gone.
Would he behave like a father to you?
Yeah, he was cool, yeah. I guess. I don't really know. You know what I mean? When you're that damaged, I don't think you really know what a real father does. But yeah, I remember sitting on his lap.
If I could write a comedian's life story, I think I'm Tony. That's the comedian's life.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's showing up, and then when do you start to realize there's a little more going on, you want to share it with your peers?
Well, what's crazy, I think you're going to love this.
I love all of it so far.
Oh, my goodness.
I will love this,
you're
I'm
not
sure.
going to believe this.
Oh, yes, I will.
So I'm like in first, second grade or something like that. I can't remember exactly when, but I was already on the school bus. So I'm on the school bus, and we keep picking up my buddy Jeff Lewis, who lives like, I don't know, six blocks catty corner, whatever way, right? And I keep noticing every time the bus would pick him up that there's this white GMC Jimmy across the street from his place. And I'm like, that's the car that my dad pulls up in sometimes. And I was so young, but I remember I remembered the license plate from that was in the driveway every morning that we would pick him up.
I know.
And so he pulls in the next time and I look outside, I match up the license plate. And, but I don't even bring anything up then because I was even then self-aware enough to know, like, I like the fact that this guy's visiting a time or two
don't
a week.
Fuck it up.
I don't want to mess it up. But after that visit, I brought it up to, my mom. I go, hey, just to let you know, I matched up the license plates and that car is always in a driveway that's just six blocks away. You told me he's a truck driver that's traveling all the time. Like, what's going on?
Oh, she must have been like, what?
What is right? We still talk about it all the time, have good laughs about it. She called my oldest sister and her best friend at the time, and they had a real sit down with me.
Her oldest sister?
My oldest sister. So, hey, like,
was she also?
Her daughter. No, she's from the original dad.
Okay.
The OG father.
And what is your and that's your oldest sister. And what does she think you are? Does she think you're from the original dad too?
No, they all know.
Okay.
My older brothers and sisters like protected the secret.
How old was she at this time? The sister.
She's like 14 years older than me. So she's like.
She's like 17 or something.
Yeah, something like that. 17, right. 18, 19. Oh man, this is
clearly Mary Poppins type family.
Wild. Woo. I remember it so clearly too. That's the interesting part is I remember where everybody was sitting. I remember where I was.
It was traumatic. That's what trauma is.
Yeah.
Right? You can remember what the wallpaper looked like
yep.
and what smells were hanging around.
100%. Yep. So, and they're telling me, you know, look, your father's very Italian in their culture. they, you know, they don't believe in divorce. So we were in love, me and your father, but we could never be together. And he has his own family and he's, you know, somewhat connected with some small pieces of organized crime. So we don't want to disturb anything. She didn't want me to be, you know, out there for the taking, like, you know, known as you know, a connected guy's bastard.
Right. Not only that, you could be used as an instrument of manipulation. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this was, they sat you down, and was the traumatizing part the seriousness with which they all approached you, or was it what they said to you, or what was so intense about it?
You know what was intense about it was that my mom, who was raising me as a single mom at the time, and again, I can't remember exactly that, how old I was, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there, I felt like I caught her in a big lie.
Oh.
And I remember the feeling of like, oh man, like if she would lie to me about this,
yeah, right,
then my goodness,
what can I trust?
What's real and what's not,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course.
So, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of that that goes on these days because of all the genetic testing. People are finding out all over the place that their dad's not their dad, their grandma's not their grandma. It's really common now.
Yeah.
So here you go.
I'm sort of glad that it happened then.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it, you know, I got to like develop this weirdness and insecurities and never-ending desire to impress people. I mean, I look at my friends. Actually, it's funny this is coming up because literally last night on an episode of Kill Tony, there was this guy that was on and he was doing these little cutie pie jokes that were getting nothing. And I mean, you could just tell he just wasn't funny, right? I mean, like to his bones. I've been doing this long enough to where I know like there's nothing funny about this guy. And I go, you're so unfunny. Let me tell you something. I guarantee you, and I would bet $1 million cash if I had it on this table in front of me right now. I would bet $1 million your parents are still together.
Yeah, and lived a lovely childhood. Yeah.
And he goes, well, they're not happily together, but they're together. I go, that's $1 million for me. Because you can really set it
enough.
You set it to a clock, man. And that's, you know, all I said to the audience, I go, all of your favorite comedians are damaged as hell. I mean, there are no two parents. The Burrs aren't out there. The Chappelles aren't still together. It ain't happening. It's not a real thing. It's so rare if that is the case. And even if that is the case, they would have had to have extreme trauma to them. You know what I mean?
The intergenerational trauma.
Right.
Yeah. And, like, and transmit it in some meaningful way to the kid.
Yeah.
Like not lightweight transmission.
Right.
Yeah. No, so, I had a bunch of that shit. So I can be funny. This is good.
Yeah.
So I had a ton of shit transmitted to me. Even though my parents stayed together, they still got rained down on stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean.
So there you are. Yeah. You can't trust your mom. You can't trust your sister. You can't trust any of your siblings.
Correct.
And now you want to tell the world?
Right.
So how did that work?
Right. Well, what ended up happening is I was already in kindergarten. I had I didn't have a big head. I had the same size head that I have now, but I was in kindergarten.
So you look like one of those commercials with the bobblehead baseball players.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, it was ridiculous. Yeah. Literally everybody called me big head in kindergarten. And I remember that summer between kindergarten and first grade, I swore to myself that when I get back to school for first grade, I'm not letting anybody make fun of me anymore. And my way of defending my big ass head was going to be to make fun of them harder after they made fun of my head. I wasn't going to go first. I wouldn't attack first, but if they came after me, I was going to hit them with 3 jokes.
Destroy.
Like I was that aware back then. Like I remember having an actual plan.
Did you like plan the jokes? Would you like look around the room and I got this?
And that's how it started. And I mean, that muscle began working then, you know. I ended up like wrestling in high school and I would get destroyed by some kids whose parents were wrestlers and this and that, you know what I mean? And like they started young and I never had that advantage. But when it came to making fun of people, I was working that muscle then. So making fun of people. And then I was always just making jokes, obviously trying to make the whole class laugh. And one of the things that happened was in like 4th or 5th grade, a teacher who hated me, because they all hated me horribly.
Because you were disruptive?
Oh, so disruptive. Yeah. It was, in retrospect, I sort of feel bad for some of them.
Did you destroy them too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would do anything for a laugh. I didn't care about detention or anything. I didn't care about conduct points. So I would just go crazy. And I made a really stupid joke one day. I said something like, because I don't remember how it happened, but the gist of the joke was like, yeah, haha, my dad molests me all the time. Like, it was just a simple, like, stupid joke out of place. I had, like, obviously the word molesting, I barely even knew what that was, but I make this dumb joke. Some people laugh, and the teacher who hates me goes, what was that? And I go, nothing, blah, 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 blah. He goes, you said your dad molests you. Well, I got bad news for you, Mr. Hinchcliffe. I have to call Children's Services now. And so, like, he literally did that. So they end up having to contact my freaking mafia father.
Oh, the real dad.
The real dad. They,
shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It got bad real quick.
Now, this was, and this was after you already had an instinct to want to share it with your peers.
Right.
But you knew better than to share it with the teachers.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I would tell my friends, like, you know, Billy and Kevin and Brian. I'd
be
like,
my dad will fucking kill you if you
right. And I was saying, I was like, look, you can't tell anybody. Don't even tell your parents. And a couple of them would come up to me and go, hey, by the way, I mentioned to my mom and dad that, you know, so-and-so's your dad. They say that that's impossible because they were. Everybody knows everybody in Youngstown.
Right,
so it was like, that's crazy.
And with these other Italian families?
Yeah, a mix. But even the Italian families are at the Irish bar drinking with the Irish guys. Right. And it's all...
This is those days.
Right, exactly. And they would say, you know...
When there was racism against Italians and Irish.
Yeah.
Like significant racism.
Yeah. No doubt. Seriously. Yeah. Big time. And they would say, you know, my mom swears that's not your dad. And I'm like, ugh. And that was, you know, traumatizing too, because it was.
Now you're the one keeping the secret.
You know, kids without dads back then, at least for sure, were treated differently. Like Jon Snow in Game of Thrones made being a bastard cool. But before that, it was like really.
There was no one.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you wouldn't get, even though you played basketball better than some of your friends, you'd be on the bench because so-and-so's dad comes to the game and the dad and the coach are friends. And then that spreads to baseball and it spreads to this and that.
Ugh. Did you ever say anything to your dad when he would come visit? Or the visits stopped by then?
No, the visits were more, as I got older, they became more and more spread out. Mm. So like, you know, by the time I'm in, you know, maybe like, 8th grade or 9th grade or whatever, it's literally only like twice a year, maybe three times a year he would swing by.
Did you care?
Not that much. Yeah. I just like playing. It is. It's hard to say because I just wanted things to be good. I never wanted to disappoint him. I wanted us to be cool. I still do. We're super cool now.
Did he ever get in any trouble? His relationships.
Okay, so check this out.
Oh, Jesus.
So
my God.
Now I am 19 years old. Yeah, we'll fast forward to 19, and I'm bartending at a place called Anthony's on the River. And in Youngstown. Right.
You didn't want to leave Youngstown?
Well, no, that's not true. I came to LA, survived for 6 to 8 months.
As a comedian?
I was waiting to start comedy. I was procrastinating like hell. I was a big stoner. My brother, who's 12 years older than me, got me to move to L. Like, convinced me to move to LA because I wanted to go to either LA or New York. He's like, LA is beautiful. You're going to love it. Come out here.
And a long time ago.
And he was smoking blunts and blunts and blunts of weed. So I'm literally just procrastinating. I'm like, I'm going to learn the city and then I'm going to start stand up. I'm still young. I'm not going to rush it.
How old were you?
19.
Yeah. Okay.
So, long story short, I end up running out of money. I have to go back to Youngstown to regroup, save money. So I get a bartending job at this place, Anthony's on the River, small little, medium-sized Italian restaurant that does a lot of like banquets and stuff like that. And one of the evenings, I'm bartending a banquet.
Uh-oh.
Where it is exactly, you feel it, right? It's the like 25 or 35, I can't remember, year anniversary of Ursuline High School, whatever. And I'm making drinks and it's busy because it's one of these open bar banquets. So you're just slinging drinks. You have no time for anything. And I'm slinging, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? What do you want? Ba, 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 right? And then I end up going, what do you want? And I turn my head and this lady is looking at me like she saw a ghost. Uh-oh. Like really, literally. And I could see that something was tremendously wrong in her eyes. Immediately I recognized it. And she goes, is your father? Yeah. And says his name, right? And I go, yeah. And she goes, wow, I always wondered if you really existed. I'm his wife of 35 years or whatever it was. And at that time, they had separated and finally divorced. But she had always, because the city, while, you know, it had maybe 65,000 people at the time, was still small, you know. So she had heard these rumors of this kid. He denied it to the high heavens. And
she just recognized him and you? Do you look like him?
And well, yeah. She goes, I go, how did you know that it's me? She goes, you look exactly like the man that I married 36 years ago.
Wow.
Or whatever it was.
That's probably what was weird for her as much as anything. Just to see you for the first time like that.
Right.
Woo.
Exactly. So she's literally looking at the man that she fell in love with to make kids with, slinging drinks behind a bar. What do you want? And she's literally like, oh my God. Yeah.
So what'd you say?
I said, yeah, you know, I forgive him. I love him. We're cool. Because again, even then, in that very moment, and I'm thinking about this now, right now in front of you, actually realizing my whole thing the whole time is I just wanted to be cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just wanted him to think that I'm cool.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean,
what did cool mean to you? Just that you and he were okay.
Yeah.
And that you were taking care of yourself.
Right.
He didn't worry about you. That
exactly.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I didn't want to be one of those kids like, why aren't you there for me?
Yeah, yeah.
I really could have used you. And I really could have used him. You know, Youngstown was crazy. The corner that I grew up on was just, there was arsons and drive-bys and murders. It was the per capita murder capital of the world when I was growing up.
And
there.
Was this all since the Depression when the steel industry fell apart? Just the town never came back?
It all got bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Horrible. I look at the house that I grew up in sometimes on Google Maps just to see if it's still there. And it looks like because Google Maps, obviously, if you lose the map version and go whatever.
Satellite.
Satellite.
Yeah.
It looks like a graveyard of houses all around it. You could see the plots where the other houses were at one point.
Yeah.
And they all get arsoned out and torn down and everything.
Wow.
And it still stands there, this crazy little house that was old when I grew up in it. But yeah, it was a scary neighborhood the whole time. So that added a real element of like, I'm tough, I'm cool, I'm out here
surviving.
Did
you get involved with anything? Any gangs or anything yourself?
No, I didn't.
And did your dad ever get any trouble with the law? I mean, if he was so connected?
No, he always was able to avoid it. You know, there was always a lot of people.
Did he have a real day job?
Yeah, he was a restaurant owner.
Perfect.
Perfect. With a big bar attached to the restaurant.
What do they call them?
Literally paintings of the Goodfellas, right. Like
checkerboard, tablecloths.
Oh yeah,
red and white tablecloths.
Totally. Hot peppers
red
and oil.
Boots, red boots. That's what I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is like a. This should be a movie.
I know.
Listen. I told Bert Kreischer when he told me the machine story. I said, "That's your movie, dude."
Yeah.
I'm telling you the same thing. Mm-hmm. You have a movie here.
No, I love it. Yeah. I mean,
do the Kill Tony fans know this about you? It sort of trickles in. But
I talked about it a bit on Tom and Christina's podcast. Not much anywhere else, though. But it sort of became when I first met Tom and Christina and did their podcast, because I don't listen to other people's podcasts. For some reason, I thought Your Mom's House had something to do with like, all right, I'll talk about my mom a little bit. I swear to God, this is true. I don't even think I ever told them that, because I realized soon after, like, oh, this show has nothing to do with moms. But I didn't.
Brown, white, and yellow.
Yeah. That's what I do. I take things in from afar. And since I don't watch podcasts, like I come into Dr. Drew, I'm like, okay, I'll just use this as a therapy session.
Well,
this is great. I'm
going to
talk
here.
About my childhood.
We do some of that, and then we grind your face into the mud a little bit.
So, So when I made the pedophile joke in, let's go back Tarantino style to fourth grade.
Yeah.
So when I made that joke,
that's how your movie's going to be structured. I got news for you.
I love it.
Yeah.
And they contacted him. and I get a phone call.
We're going to start in the studio, and then you're going to go out to the to your childhood.
And I get a phone call. Well, first of all, my mom was furious, and she could foresee the problem that was happening.
Yeah, furious with you because it was stupid.
Furious with me, and also furious with the damn teacher,
of course,
without a doubt, because this guy's opening a can of worms that he can't even fathom. She's been protecting the secret. I've been trying my hardest to protect the secret. You can't not tell a few best friends when you're a kid. Lighting off firecrackers and stuff, and they all have dads. You know what
it's like
I mean?
The Bronx Tale. This is the Bronx Tale,
dude. It really is. Yeah. And my dad does look a lot like Chaz Palminteri. So it that I swear to God, my
so we'll have a musical version. This is gonna be great.
My four older brothers and sisters from my mom's side cannot watch A Bronx Tale because it scares them because my dad, who raised them more than he raised me, because he was around the house a lot those 11 years before my mom got pregnant.
Yeah.
He was literally very hands-on, more than their alcoholic father. So they looked at him like a real father figure that was cool, you know what I mean? Wife beaters and track suits.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah. So they can't even watch that movie because...
You gotta see him a little younger.
I mean, that's exactly, literally... In A Bronx Tale with that hairline, not that one, not the one from Usual Suspects, but A Bronx Tale, Palminteri. Yeah. I mean, that's literally him.
Go.
Yeah,
there we go.
And they can't even watch it because the thought of him getting shot in the head, because they knew, everyone knew that he was connected. So it's like, you know, when you really know someone's connected, it's not like The Sopranos or these movies where. You know, you're like, anything can happen. They're scared. You know what I mean? They're kids that are like, God, I hope nothing ever happens to them. And that movie was literally traumatizing to them because I loved it. I would literally have sick days and watch Goodfellas and A Bronx Tale. And it would be this connective. I would sort of feel like I was hanging out with my dad.
Did you
want to
be one of those guys?
Again,
I had patients,
really.
You know, that became drug addicts later, but who would tell me things like, I saw The Godfather and I knew right then that was going to be my life. Yeah. I was like, really? That? You decided that was going to be your life? Wow.
It's so interesting. For as much as I was entertained by all of it, all of that mafia stuff, I never wanted to do that. There was something...
Did you want to do comedy?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Did you know what that meant?
No, not at all. I literally had no idea. In fact,
you didn't know what a podcast was in 1995?
Right. Well, I didn't even think you could become a stand-up comedian. Like, I had no idea. When I actually did a little bit of research and found out that you do this thing called an open mic, and I'm like, well, how much do you pay to do open mics?
Yeah,
and they're like, they're free. You get to do it for free. What are you talking about? Right. And I'm like, wait, what? You could, like, get good at something for free? This is such a... life hack. Like, to me, you know, again, and I was raised super poor too. Another big myth about having a connected mother and father, because my mom ran numbers too. It was my dad's way of paying child support, was getting her, making her basically the head of running numbers for the city of Youngstown.
You mean bookie?
Yes.
She was the bookie person.
Exactly.
Oh, shit. Did she have little books and stuff all over the place?
It was crazy. Phone calls would come in all the time.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's almost more funny. I mean, it's you know what I mean? That's a layer of color to this whole thing.
Dude.
That if you were writing it, you couldn't dream up.
Dude.
You couldn't do it.
Her code
name. That's why it's a movie.
Yeah. Her code name. Yeah. Her code name. Exactly. Her code name was Gina, but I didn't know that. Because my mom's name
is Gina there?
Yeah. So my mom's name is
There's
Joy.
There's a wrong number, Mom.
Literally happened. That's the story that I'm telling. I can't remember. Maybe 5, 6, 7. Who knows? You know, little kids like to answer the phone back then.
Yep.
Real landline I had back then.
So I went,
hello. And people would go, is Gina there? And there was like 2, 3, 4 times where I go, sorry, no Gina lives here. And I hang up the phone.
She'd be pissed. You wouldn't understand why.
Eventually, I said, she had no idea. And I go, Mom, people keep calling here for some lady named Gina. And she goes, what the fuck are you telling them? What are you doing? She was old school mad.
Oh,
you fucking son of a bitch. From now on, you just give me the phone. Stop answering the fucking phone. And so that literally happened.
I imagine her like Davidson's mom in the Staten Island story. Was she like that? Or?
I never got to see that.
Yeah.
She runs numbers in that?
No, but she has that what the fuck stuff where she just big hair and then blows up.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was what's her name? The Italian actress.
Marissa Tomei.
Marissa
right?
Tomei. It was Marissa Tomei. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would hear her on the phone and she would have to repeat back the numbers that the people were playing. So she would be on the phone. She'd be 456 straight, 575 boxed, blah, blah, blah. Like, I still remember all the things. Straight, boxed. Straight meant that if your number came out straight up, then you get like whatever it was, like 100 to 1. Or if it came out boxed, that means that the numbers could come out in any order.
Right.
And you get like whatever, 20 times the amount or whatever. So where was I? What was I talking about? Oh yeah, the pedophile joke that I made. Yeah. And the teacher that hated me. And anyway, it's the middle of the school year when that happened. And I don't know exactly what my dad did. I have no idea. But 2 weeks later, that teacher no longer worked at that school.
Whoa.
And then 2 or 3 weeks after that, my mom and I are at the grocery store together. And guess who we see stacking cantaloupes at the grocery store, wearing the grocery store apron? Yeah. So I'm pretty sure someone told him, you're done.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
Youngstown. You don't think about Youngstown. I mean, it's not like Staten Island. You know what I mean? You don't think of it the same way.
Yeah. People hear the word Ohio and they think I was raised on a farm.
Right.
Ohio is one of those weird states that has a shockingly large amount of different things. It's seven major cities.
You don't realize it's in between Dayton and Columbus and Cleveland and Cincinnati and
Youngstown.
Akron is another weird place.
Toledo.
It's not an accident that Akron was the birthplace of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And then within all of that, huge immigrant populations.
Yep.
Strangely European, right? The Eastern Europeans went to New York and Chicago.
Right.
But the German, Irish, the ones really trying to get away from some heavy shit also came to Ohio.
And Youngstown is directly 5 hours from New York City and 5 hours from Chicago. And Interstate 80 runs through directly through the center of Youngstown to Chicago to New York. So a lot of Italian families set up shop in Youngstown in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, so that they could visit their other families. They're like, this is perfect. I'll go see. So,
well, that's the way immigrants used to do it. Yeah. They'd set up around each other. Mm-hmm. Like outside of Cleveland, I remember there'd be a huge German population.
Yeah.
And a big Czech population. They just would go. And that sort of makes sense. They'd go where they could relate to people and speak the same language, literally.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So how you're now 19 and slinging booze at event place.
Yeah.
How do you get out of there and go do something else?
I just did it. I mean, I went, my brother was nice enough to let me crash on his couch for like 6 to 8
Where
months.
Where was his house?
That was in Burbank, California.
Okay, so it's sort of centrally.
Right.
Sort of. Do you have a car?
Nope.
Oh, shit.
I was taking a bicycle.
You can't bicycle anywhere in Los Angeles.
I know. So I would bicycle to the train station at Universal City Studios.
Oh, there was a train by then.
Yeah.
Which already
was brand new.
Yeah, must have.
And to me, I just thought it was the coolest stuff. I didn't realize exactly how poor I was. Like, thank God.
Yeah, but in a weird way, all males in their 20s are poor. I mean, very few have any money.
Right.
I mean, none.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It's just everyone's in the same.
I guess you're right. Yeah. But I wasn't really like a kid. Like college was not an option for me. I hated school so much that, you know, I tried college and I lived off campus, Ohio State. And I decided to live off campus like 15, 20 minutes north. And back then, and I mean, this is 2003, so like the Iraq War and all this is happening, right? And that's when Howard Stern was maximum strength, the Stern that I loved. And their show was hysterical. And I was so stupid. I'm such an idiot that when they're like, okay, when do you want your college classes to be? And I'm like, I'm out on my own. This is going to be sweet. You know what? I'll take the 6 a.m. class. I'll take the 8 a.m. class and the 10 a.m. class. And then I'll have the rest of the day to get to do whatever I want. I'm a genius. I can't believe I even get to take these early classes. I'm such an idiot. So what ended up happening was that because I took the early classes, first of all, my life was a wreck because that was stupid. I should have been getting some sleep. But I would be driving this 15, 20 minute drive from Polaris Parkway in Columbus down to the campus. and I'd be listening to Stern, and it would be so funny to me.
You couldn't get in the classroom.
And I literally was sitting in the parking lot at times looking at the window of the class that I wasn't even a good enough student to get a scholarship to go to. So I'm paying for that class in that room on that side of the window, in a crazy amount of money I'm paying too. And I can't get out of the car. I'm literally listening to Robin Quivers' news thinking, what would I say if I was in that studio?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Did you ever get to do an interview in there?
No.
It's intense.
Yeah. No, I bet. I mean, I can't.
But Joe interviews you, right?
Oh, yeah. I
mean, it's very similar.
Oh, yeah.
They just have hyper focus.
Right.
They're super tuned.
Yeah.
They follow their instincts.
Yeah.
And you kind of feel like you're hypnotized almost.
Yeah.
You know, right?
For sure.
And that's it. And then you all of a sudden you wake up again. And you're like, oh, where am I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I dropped out of college like immediately. And, so started stand-up at 22 at the Comedy Store. And yeah, I was on a bicycle, no car.
How did you get to the Comedy Store from the train?
It doesn't stop down there, does it? Train to Universal City to Hollywood Highland. And then I would get back on my bicycle.
Oh, you took the bike on the
and
train.
Ride. Yeah, okay. You take the bike on the train.
Got it. Okay.
One of the times, to show you how amazing life is, 22, just got the job at the Comedy Store. I'm working a phone shift. So that's like 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Used to literally answer the landline phone. Comedy Store was one of the last places to build a website. I mean, I don't know when they did it. Had to be like 2011 or 12 or 13. They were so late to the party. So you would have to answer the phone and go, Comedy Store, this is Tony. And you'd have to lie because the shows weren't that great back then. The lineup wasn't like that crazy. So you'd have to be like, great show tonight. If you give me your credit card info, we'll sell you the tickets. Like, that's how it was done. Anyway, so I'm on my way to this 11 a.m. shift at the Comedy Store. I take my bike to Universal City Station. I get on the train and I realize that my front tire is flat. Mm. I don't have a backup tire. Mm. So now I realize I have to take the bus from Hollywood Highland to...
Sunset. It goes over the hill.
Yeah.
Sunset and Hollywood.
Actually, I would walk down. I had to walk down to Sunset to take the Sunset bus to the Comedy Store. And they
by the way, walk down from there is...
Yeah.
It's a 3/4 mile.
Three or four long blocks. And they have these buses called Rapids, you know what I mean? Which are the ones that have fewer stops than the other ones. And one of the rapid, I forgot to tell you, it started downpouring.
And the buses in Los Angeles are filled with
wild people.
Yeah.
But again,
it's not like New York.
But a fun fact is that, again, coming from Youngstown, it was all a vacation to me. Yeah. Like, I'm like, this is heaven.
Yeah.
Like, bum piss, that's the least of our worries. This guy doesn't have a weapon. He's not threatening my mother. This is incredible. So it started downpouring one of these times, and I'm standing. I had to walk in the rain, my bicycle, down to Sunset and Highland. And one of the rapids, I'm like, okay, great. Here comes a bus. But it turns out it's a rapid that doesn't stop there. And it's downpouring. I mean, I'm already soaking wet. And this rapid bus hits one of those giant puddles like out of a movie and double soaks me. So I'm literally standing there. I mean, as wet as a human can be. Literally more wet than if it was a shower. Because a shower only is kicking out so much water. A bath on me. So, yeah, those were some of the low times.
And it reminds me of what Pete Holmes had to do in the movie Crashing, where he had to chill out in front of the Comedy Studios.
Yeah.
You were doing the same thing, but on the phone lines.
Exactly.
Because L.A. didn't have the foot traffic.
Right.
So you were just doing it on the phone. Interesting.
And I mean, literally.
And by doing that all day, they'd give you a couple minutes at night on the stage?
Not even. They would give you a couple minutes on Sundays and Mondays.
Yeah.
But it was, for me, it was an opportunity to figure stuff out and
would
get
it. Would
you
watch other comedians and study?
A lot, yeah.
Were you the kind of person that kept note cards and things of jokes, like Joan Rivers style?
No, I would write on paper, but I would try to memorize it as hard as I could. It was really hard in the beginning, but as you get better at it, you end up writing better jokes that are worth remembering. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like when you're really excited to do something.
Stuff is in your head, you can put it together in different ways.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Synthesize it.
But that was all like self-taught.
And was there a break?
Of?
I mean, was there a moment where you're like, okay, now things are moving?
I immediately, as cheesy as it sounds, I was positive that if I just got that job and was able to keep it for a few years, that everything else was going to be fine. I was positive of
it. Isn't that interesting?
I looked at that building, you know, and again, I'm sure being raised by a single mom in a chaotic environment helped me with this, or made me think that I was so comfortable and cool there because it was Mitzi Shore's place. You know what I mean? It was right. Everyone's.
Did you know Mitzi at the time?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, I met her as an employee, and she would call the club regularly back then, and she was on, you know, heavy Parkinson's medication and everything. So, like, you know, it's sort of like having like a crazy grandma that's also a literally one of the strongest, smartest women of all time.
Yeah. If you want to see, I'm dying up here. It's the club owner is based on Mitzi.
Yeah. 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 And she's super powerful, and, you know, but I looked at that building, which is just to this day, I think the coolest place on planet Earth.
Cathedral.
Black and red and neon, like dirty but clean. And like,
there's been talk of building a hotel around it and stuff. I think they would leave the old building intact.
Yeah.
But that never seemed to happen.
Thank goodness. Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to mess anything there up. But once I knew that I had that job.
There it is. That picture on the right is it.
I mean, that room right there, that main room, I could walk through with all the lights off. Like, I know where everything is. Mm-hmm. I know how to step up on that stage without even taking the stairway. Like, I mean, I know what's that way, what's that. I just know everything. I used to have to literally turn those lights on. I'd have to walk through one way all the way across it to the breaker room and turn that stuff on. So, you know, I know that place like the back of my hand.
How'd you get the idea for Kill Tony?
From that, from her, basically her open mic setup was 3 minutes per comedian always. Only 3 minutes. That's what everybody had to do. And I was lucky enough from working there for a few years, the talent coordinator put me in position to host, which means you have to go up on the stage every 3 minutes and back down again.
Oh, so you had lots of workout.
Right. Yeah. And I would go up and obviously
you have to be funnier than the guys.
Right. Yeah. And you only have 3 minutes to think about what you're going to say after they're done. So I would literally got in the habit of being able to watch someone for 3 minutes and be able to make fun of them 1, 2, 3 maybe jokes, and then go, all right, your next comedian, blah, 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 blah. And so, but I realized very early on that while 3 minutes seems like a short time, it's also a very long time if someone's a newer comedian. So I decided...
It's like 3 minutes in the ring.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exhausting.
Yeah.
And so I decided to make it 1 minute for my show. And because I'm like, if you give, you can, it could be a crazy person. So you don't want 3 minutes of just someone being completely annoying. It's just unbearable. After 1 minute, it seems
long.
Have
you found anybody in Kill Tony? Is there anybody that came out of it that was good?
Oh, yeah. So many. Yeah. I mean, Preacher Lawson, I think he won America's Got Talent or got second. Whatever he's doing massive theaters now. Yeah. He's literally, I think, doing better than me. And yeah, we found him very early on. We're like, you're going to be a star. I mean, it's happened a lot. And the guests that I've had,
I get to see only ones you shit on, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, we got to watch everybody grow. I mean, they, Tiffany Haddish was a guest 8 years before anybody knew who she was. Mm. She was there goofing around, and Tim Dillon, as soon as I met him, I was telling my listeners, this is the future. This is a superstar. This guy is going to be one of the biggest in the world.
Wow.
And I was warning. I'm always, you know, very, very honest when it comes to people that I like.
You should be a talent manager.
I mean, kind of. I already, in a weird way, am. It's a very Vince McMahon-like job that I have over there.
But you don't get to participate the way Vince did.
Right. Yeah.
So you got to change the business model a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I could listen. I listen to your stories for longer than I'm supposed to.
Yeah,
And I appreciate you sharing them.
Thank you.
And just instinctively, when stories are that good, they can be put up on stage films and TV and things like that. So think about it.
Yeah, no, I definitely.
I mean, there's a lot, and I like the fact that I was just reading. I was telling Tony off the air that I was reading I'm reading a diary of an attorney who was living through the Depression in Youngstown, and you see day by day how the city unravels. And this guy, the attorney doesn't really understand economics. He's trying to come to terms with what's happening. He's trying to understand it. He's reading a lot while he's like going, I think I understand why this is happening and why that's happening. And you just see that things can get worse, and then they can get worse, and then they can still get worse. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think we've lost track of here.
Yeah.
We've lived in very blessed time for quite a while.
Jeez, totally.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And what's the future for you? Just keep doing Kill Tony?
I love it, man. I love it. The show is constantly evolving.
It throws off Cousins.
Yeah.
It's got, like you said, in New York, it's got Cousins.
Oh, I mean, it's incredible. It's a whole universe of people, because some of the people are regulars on this show.
Yeah.
If I really find somebody to be so entertaining that... and I really think that I want to interview them once a week in front of a live audience. Mm. If I really see that kind of promise in them, I make them a regular, which is, it now creates headliners. I mean, it's now I can pick somebody and they blow up.
Mercenary, I would love to be on your show just to show up, because I love all the people in your world.
Oh, you would be so perfect. I mean, literally, we could talk about the psychology of anyone.
I think it'd be so fun.
If you're ever here on a Monday, I insist.
We'll talk about the Dunning-Kruger phenomenon, which I see writ large. You've heard of Dunning-Kruger?
No.
Oh, it's these two psychologists that wrote this theory about how it is that people can, let's say an American Idol, get up there, sing like shit, and then believe they had sounded great.
Right.
It's a psychological phenomenon called Dunning-Kruger.
Well, that should be the name of my podcast.
It should be the name of your podcast. I know. It's the Dunning-Kruger on Parade.
No doubt.
It's essentially, they can't quite figure out what it is. Yeah. I think it's a little bit of lack of self-awareness, but they think a lot of it is not enough exposure to good. Things that are good. They think they know what's good, but they actually haven't been exposed to it, and they've certainly not actually trained in it. They see somebody doing something, and think, I can do that. Like you said, I can just go do that.
Right.
Then they don't work the muscle out. They don't know what it takes.
Wow.
And because we live in a world right now where everybody can do anything, you know, and nobody's better than anybody else, and everyone's equal, the fact that you spent all those years working that out.
Yeah.
That's neither here nor there.
Right.
They can do what you do. No problem.
Yeah.
No problem. It's a weird time. It's called Dunning-Kruger. But anyway, I would love to do that, because I've, like I said, I've been exposed now to Skanks, and I want to go to Skankfest. And
oh, I love that.
I'm going to go.
Skankfest is literally the best comedy festival in the world.
I'm going.
Literally.
Are you doing Kill Tony there too?
Yeah.
Oh.
Always. We signed a lifetime deal. Oh. We didn't actually sign anything, but I just literally told them that Kill Tony will always be at Skankfest.
You use blood, and
yeah,
this
yeah,
is like
yeah.
your dad taught you.
Exactly.
That kind of deal.
Legion of Skanks style.
Yeah. But. And again, like I said, the garbage guys, are you garbage? And it turns out I'm total garbage.
Yeah.
Proudly so.
Yeah. Well, me too. Yeah. I don't know if you heard my story, but they loved having me on, because I did. I covered some of this with them as well. That's another podcast where I talked about this. And they're literally like, you might be the complete dumpster, my friend. You might be the dumpster the garbage goes into. Yeah.
So anyway, okay, we'll set that up. We'll work that out as time goes on here. But let's go do a little your mom's house style stuff here for a minute. If you guys don't mind, let's do some clips. All right? Can we start with that?
Yeah.
Because I want to go from, I've been indulging myself listening to Tony. I literally could sit and like sit by the fireplace and listen to you tell stories for 3 or 4 hours.
It goes on and on.
I'm sure it does. It's a piece of, it's a human drama, but it's a piece of American history. You know what I mean? There's American history into this.
I mean, let me just tell you one last thing.
Yeah.
Because the ribbon on it is that the last time I saw him was just a few months ago. He got to see me perform in the round in the middle of a sold out arena in Pittsburgh, which was only a 45-minute drive for him coming from Youngstown. And he got to come back in this giant, you know, luxurious green room that we had literally rented. It was a Saturday night, so it was the night of a big boxing match. And he loves boxing because Youngstown's also a famous boxing city.
That's right.
So he had the time of his life. Like, there's literally like gourmet pizza that, you know, we have from whoever. There's, you know what I mean, whatever you want.
So here's the question.
Fresh coffee and a giant pay-per-view screen, because Joe Rogan had bought the pay-per-view. So and he kind of knows who Joe Rogan is. And so he's like, I'm watching fights with these guys. I just watched them destroy an arena.
Right.
And now I'm sitting here. So I literally got to accomplish that kind of like.
So the question, though,
the thing I was chasing the whole time.
Hang on. The question is, did he show deep appreciation for your accomplishments? Or did he co-opt it all? Like, that's my son. My son does this.
He didn't do that. He's okay. Sort of somewhere right around the middle there.
Yeah, that's what
you know,
I
he plays it very cool. He's tough to get a read on. But
how old is he now?
I could tell he's proud. 76. Mm. Yeah. So
he's
like,
old enough to let go of some of the narcissistic stuff for sure.
Totally, totally.
Does he have a bunch of grandkids now?
No, actually, no, he doesn't. My brother and my sister on that side do not have kids.
Is you call those half siblings brother and sister?
Yeah.
Do you have a sibling relationship with them?
Not really. Not really. But the four on my mom's side, all the way.
Is everybody still in Youngstown?
We consider ourselves true brothers and sisters. The two sisters are in Youngstown. The two brothers are now in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's what you said. They were out there.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And congratulations on living a full life.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty wild, no doubt.
Yeah. I'm kind of moved by it because I'm literally wanting sort of what you did, which is you engaged with, gusto, you engaged with, your heart in this thing that I just don't see young people doing anymore. And it really kills me.
Right.
They're not getting excited about anything. They're not engaging. They don't want to see things through. They just, everything's like, whatever, who cares? I fuck everything.
Yeah.
And that breaks my heart. They're like missing this richness of what you can do.
I think those smartphones are dumbing them up.
I agree with you. They've got all this in their hands, so what the fuck? Right. The porn's here.
No personality whatsoever.
It just takes the everything. It's almost like a drug. It takes the wind out of their sail.
Totally.
And then if you throw weed on top of it, it really takes the wind out of their sail. So, all right, so some clips. Here we go. Come on, Zolo. Let's do this.
You got it.
What are we watching?
Okay, we're going to make a real quick video about emoji self-pronouns.
Uh-oh.
First of all, for those of you who don't know, I use to the emoji self-pronouns.
Huh.
Now we're going to talk about why I don't say those verbally, because that was really weird to say. Ugh. Emoji self-pronouns are a type of neo-pronoun, or as some people call them, xeno-pronouns. That I've, thank you, by the way, for those who decided to educate me on that. I did some more research on it, and you are correct, xeno-pronouns are a thing. A lot of people still refer to noun self and emoji self pronouns as neo pronouns, though.
I can't go on. I just can't.
I just can't go on.
Christina and I were watching a video of someone like this, and it just kills me. Again, this is more what we were just talking about. This is an extremely bright young lady whose mind is being consumed with material that has no purpose.
Yeah.
I hope it gives her a sense of identity and whatnot. Oh, cool, fine, but.
Right. It's a weird, I mean, I can't, tooth emoji? She identifies as a tooth emoji?
But you can't say it out loud.
Oh, you can?
You just have to hold up the tooth sign. Right? I'm understanding you right?
Nailed
and
it.
And
Xeno-pronoun?
Xeno-pronoun. Do you have the video, I'm always asking unfair things, but the side-by-side with Christina, with the woman talking about how feminine aisles are completely inappropriate, and Christina's eating potato chips or something, and they're all spilling out of her mouth.
Oh, yeah, I think that's on her Instagram.
It is on her Instagram. Well, you're looking for that. Give me another one.
Okay.
People are wild today.
But it makes me sad.
Yeah.
It's like... this girl, this woman could be, who knows, or tooth, this tooth could be doing all
Welcome
kinds of
Revelation
things.
Revelation Unraveled. I'm your host, William Tapley, also known as the third eagle of the apocalypse and the co-prophet of the end times. On this program, I want to talk about contraception and how using that will prevent you from being raptured.
Raptured?
Last week, the Pope... made news headlines saying that you cannot prevent AIDS through the use of condoms. And of course, he was correct. The only true way of preventing AIDS or any other sexually transmitted diseases is through a monogamous relationship between
monogamous?
A husband and a wife.
In
Genesis chapter 38,
it wouldn't have worked for your mom
God
and dad in case they'd been with somebody else. Look
at his lavalier
woman.
Microphone. It's an actual microphone.
Technique called withdrawal.
That's
that
fantastic.
Is, he spilled his seed upon the ground.
He has the microphone stuffed into his coat.
God was so displeased with this that he killed Onan.
Okay, now I can't. Once again, I can't go on. I just can't do it. This is as wasteful as the pronoun, the tooth lady.
I didn't know there was a Republicans of TikTok. TikTok. This is interesting.
I think I've come across this guy on TikTok once in a while, and I'll inevitably stop because he sounds like he's saying something interesting, and then it's like, oh, sorry, my mistake.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this stuff is
okay, take
wild.
A second here. We're going to go to a TikTok. I mean, a Instagram, beg your pardon.
Yeah.
There it is. Okay, so hold on. There. Watch this.
Correct sign. A very wrong sign. A feminine care aisle. Let's talk about it again. How not all women are menstruators and not all menstruators are women. I know the term menstruators isn't meant to simplify cis women into just having a period. It's really about simply using more inclusive language to talk about periods and those who experience them. If it was another incorrect...
It's just Christina reacting to it. It's so funny.
Hilarious.
Oh,
she's the best.
Yes. That is one of my best, her best takes I've seen on this topic. Just watching her eat potato chips alongside it. That was fantastic. All right. Give me another, what are we getting into these days now? Any TikToks or what do you got, Zolo?
Here we are at CC's Lingerie, MrBra.com. MrBra.com, we sell bras. We have every size you can imagine. We have all sorts of foundation garments, okay? We sell bridal bras, lingerie, corsets, you know, hard-to-fit bras, you know, strapless, merciful.
Where's the cameraman going?
Maternity. We sell whatever type bra you could need here at MrBra.com. You want to find me. You want to get to know me. Yes, you do. I have so many bras. So many bras.
Is this the king above 18?
Bras.
Is this what he does during the day?
I have every size. I have the best fitting bras. My bras go up to a P cup. LMNO P cup. Here, you got an O cup. We have an O cup. Here's an O cup.
Let's see.
You need an O cup. I've got it.
Oh.
LMNOPO. You know, look at this. What do I have here? I've got a P cup.
Oh, hallelujah.
Oh, my goodness.
A P cup. Who the heck has a P cup?
This is what the MyPillow guy is up to nowadays.
I like the way he's disparaging his clients. Who has a P cup? Your basic.
Non-underwire.
God.
Non-underwire.
All right, enough of the bra, man.
You think there's a woman out there with pea-sized tits just like, finally. I mean, I just wasn't able to find him. Glad he found me.
There was in Arcadia, California, where my kids used to go to a batting cage. When you get off the freeway, you walk right, you drive right into this store that's called the Wizard of Bras. My sons thought that was a clever
this
name.
Guy has measuring tape around his neck.
Oh, sure.
As if though any woman that's going to come in there, he's going to immediately start wrapping that around my guess is their throat. We have every kind of bra. We have bra made from the skin of some of my victims. This guy's wild, dude.
He's good. All right, what else you got? He does have
one.
That quality. That's why I was thinking, the king, you know, we have a frequent flyer called the King and Queen Above 18. He looks just like that guy. He's just some perv that sits with his clothes off and talks to women.
Oh, wow.
It's nice. Perv. I mean, a highbrow
one
gentleman.
Day when Nick says the rooster followed him and attacked him.
Well, his neck flares up and he's doing his thing and he's trying to jump up at me.
He was trying to get the animal away.
And I try to hit it, but the chicken's jumping up at me and I accidentally knocked it in the head. You know, call it a lucky shot, whatever.
But when Dave Felice came home, all he saw was his rooster dead in a ditch.
And I said, I'm calling JSO. I called JSO. JSO didn't do nothing. Then a couple of days later, I realized I could call animal control.
And in late June, James Nix went to jail for animal cruelty.
No.
Next thing you know, he calls the chicken police on me.
While the neighbors continue to fight, Nix says he never should have been arrested.
I didn't know to give it a 21-gun salute. CPR? Mouth to mouth, you know, or call the chicken ambulance. Chickens are dying every day, people, at churches, Popeyes, and Kentucky Fried Chicken. Really.
Well,
wow.
Now you feel better about Youngstown, don't you?
Yeah.
It's like,
I'm so glad I was raised in Youngstown.
Yeah, it could have been like this. Could have been. There's other parts of the country that has its own culture.
Wow. He called the chicken police. Oh, my God. This is so fun. Sometimes I forget what is going on out there in the rest of the world.
Northside.
This is like a real, I can't watch the news anymore. You know, it's just like,
Yeah, I can't either.
I avoid it. I find it to be like, I think it makes, it used to be you would read the news and you get smarter.
Yeah, you get the news.
Yeah. And
I think, or you get someone's analysis of the news and you knew you were reading an analysis.
Yeah. And now it is just,
it's disgusting.
I mean, it's that. It's become that. In fact, that's some of the more enlightening news I've seen in a long time.
So does that everything we went through? Is a cool guy in courthouse? Is that the same? Is that the chicken dude?
That's another guy.
Let's see him.
All right.
Anything with a cool guy, I'm interested. I haven't seen enough cool guys lately.
I don't have a last name.
Oh, this is like Fed Smoker.
What's your first name? I don't have a first name either. I've got a name. My name is Robert. You can call me Robert.
Oh, wow.
I'm not a person. See, you deal here with Admiralty Maritime Jurisdiction, which deals with persons, which I am not.
What are you? Are you
human? I'm a man.
You're human?
I'm a man, yes.
Are you a U.S. citizen?
No.
You're not a U.S. citizen?
I was not born in Washington, D.C. or any territory of the federal, under federal jurisdiction, so no, I'm not a U.S. citizen.
Were you born in the United States of America? In any of the states?
I was born in America. Yes, oh, I'm a state citizen.
These guys,
one of the several
these poor
states.
Guys have to deal with this shit all the time. Can you imagine?
One of the several.
Which state?
Idaho.
Idaho? Can I see your Idaho state license?
No. I don't have one.
You don't have one?
My person does, but I don't. Oh. And I don't wish to create joinder with you.
Oh, my God.
All right.
They let him in?
I speak with the prosecutor.
Oh.
Excuse me.
Camera.
Excuse me. You're blocking my freedom of movement.
Hey, Ronnie, the limo driver's there.
All right. Well, P. Barnes, you just admitted to me that you're violating my rights.
No, I'm not. You can't come in with the camera.
Well, you're violating my rights. And this is also freedom of the press.
From behind you?
This is also freedom of the press. I mean, I don't know what the hell law book you're reading, man, but it doesn't apply to me.
So this is what meth does to your brain. Or bipolar disorder. Bipolar can do this too.
Yeah.
You are not God. You have no jurisdiction over me.
God's not worried about
There's literally a please turn off cell phone thing in the corner.
Because you want to do something wrong? Because if
look
it's
at all, look
rules,
at a good way to get into court watching him.
On wronging somebody else because they're afraid of being held accountable.
You guys, this is your new Fed Smoker. I got news for you.
Yeah.
Can you follow more of his stuff? Is he out there?
I mean, I don't have to go in because you can't even issue a warrant for me.
And
I'm going to go in there and I'm going to speak with the prosecutor.
You can go in there without the camera.
Well, please step aside. I'm going in.
No, you're not going in.
Don't touch me.
You're not going in, sir.
Let the record show that you just
the
battered
record
me.
Show.
Oh, my goodness.
Stop, please.
Let the record show.
I'm not doing anything wrong.
Oh, no.
Hey. You know what? You guys are really overstepping your bounds right now.
Put the cuffs on him.
Oh, they're going to cuff him.
What are you arresting me for?
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Camera's done now.
I love it. I think this happens to this guy a lot. I'm almost positive I saw this because I saw something somewhere where a guy just like that recently, like last week, he got pulled over. He had warrants out for him, and the cop's like, I need to see your ID.
Yeah.
You know, I matched up your license plate. You have warrants out for your arrest. He's like, I am allowed to film. I'm allowed to do this. You're not allowed to impede on my thing.
Yeah.
And they literally just slammed him as hard as you can imagine. They just pick him up and slam him on the ground.
Yeah. I think people are tired of this.
Yeah.
Of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's usually meth and it's bipolar. I have a colleague who's now a therapist, and he would go to the Quantico on a regular basis because he had decided he has some special information about how to save the world, essentially. He was manic, but they don't look that manic necessarily, but
right.
they're up for days and days at a time getting into weird, you know, dark web stuff.
Right.
And
talking about how the earth is flat.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he would show up regularly. They got to know him by name and they'd say, sir, can we help you get some help? Are we just talking about? I'm here to say I've got special information.
Yeah.
You're impeding on my
identity. You need the help.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And so, yeah, these are mental health issues. And we live in a world where you're not allowed to help people like that until they end up in jail.
Right.
And that's how they end up. So,
yeah.
Let's do a couple of emails. I had too much fun talking to you today. I have an uncircumcised penis, but the hood doesn't come all the way back. Who should I see or what can I do about it? Keep it high and tight. So that's a phimosis. You hear me talk about it all the time, my friend. It is the complication of not having had a circumcision. You've heard of phimosis?
Mm-mm.
Let's look up phimosis. I'm sorry, I'll do this to you, but phimosis is up there. And prepare yourself. I'm going to want a couple of voice messages before I wrap up here today.
I actually have a good doctor question for
you.
Oh,
good. We'll do it.
Yeah.
Phimosis, see that one down the lower left there. See the, how the sphoric skin comes narrowed. That's it. Yeah. And the penis can't get out. And it tears and it bleeds and, and it hurts. And you have to get a circumcision to repair it. So any urologist can do it lickety-split.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why'd you have to say lickety-split like that? that made it weird.
It's not weird. So what's your question? What is your question?
So here's my question. Yeah. So I've been lucky enough to make some really extremely rich Texas friends. I didn't know living in L.A. that, like, rich people could also be cool as hell.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, so long story short, made some ridiculously rich friends.
Were they Houston rich or Austin rich?
Originally from Houston. Now they live in Austin. See, okay. You have these friends. You know what I'm talking about.
I've been to Houston, and I've been to those neighborhoods. I actually spoke at a, like, it must have been like a club or something.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, shit, this is a different kind of rich.
That's what happened to me. They hired me to roast their buddy for his 40th birthday. Then the blizzard happened, and we all ended up getting stranded together. They're like, let's get out of here. Private planes can still leave. Commercial flights are canceled. Let's get out of here right now. Like, this is as that big freeze was just starting.
Yep.
And we're like, he's like, you want to go to Puerto Rico? I'm like, my girlfriend doesn't have her passport. He's like, how about Key West? I'm like, it's raining there the next 2 days. He's like, all right. And then I look up Miami, 95 degrees the next 4 days. Send him that.
But see, that's the thing I think that's cool about rich.
Yeah.
I would just put it under freedom.
Yep. 100%.
Just, they're free.
100%.
They're not encumbered by what the rest of us are encumbered by.
So instead of it being a one-night roast, we end up making friends over the next 5 days. Like, it's the coolest crew. One guy plays in the NFL. Another one's this. Another one's that. Anyway, so we all ended up making best friends a couple of years ago when I first moved here. And so now this guy goes to Europe like 3 months out of every year, and he lets me stay in his castle that he has here in Austin, only like 8 minutes away. It's ridiculous. Long story short, on top of many other ridiculous things, he has the most luxurious bidet I've ever sat on in my life.
Is it an actual separate porcelain?
Totally okay. a separate porcelain. Thing. See, I always thought the move was to have a bidet attached to your normal toilet.
Sure.
No, you need a whole separate beast.
And is it a fountain?
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it can be very powerful. Mm-hmm. And when I first sat on it, I just turned the thing a little bit. I'm like, wow, this is great. This is amazing. And then the next time a little bit higher, and the next time a little bit higher. So my question to you.
Now you start doing it with a blowjob.
But can I overdo it? Because I've Googled this literally recently because I'm like, this is just.
If you are giving yourself an enema, you can overdo it.
Really?
But if you're just flushing the anal ring, you're fine.
I mean, what technically defines it as an enema?
Enema, it comes back at a volume of fluid comes back, usually with some brown with it.
Right.
That's you're giving an enema now.
Okay, so how am I guess I've been giving myself an enema then. I've been blasting what is my head supposed to hit the ceiling when I'm on the thing? No. So what can happen? What can happen if I turn this thing up too high?
You're it's not that big a deal.
Just
the normal functions aren't sort of being enhanced.
Right.
Let's
put
it that way. You're and rectal pressures do make a difference. Your rectum is a pretty delicate instrument.
Right.
And you want it to keep functioning normal.
I want to keep it delicate.
Yeah,
I've been basically like cheating on my girlfriend with this bidet.
Yeah. Well, like I said, she could be included in the whole thing.
Right.
It could be who knows what you guys could invent there.
It is wild.
Give me a voice message.
Hey, Dr. Drew, Booth Boys. I got a question for you, Dr. Drew, kind of a medical question. You know, I'm sure you've seen these videos of men that like genital mutilation or abuse, you know, women stomping on their balls.
Yeah, we get the point.
Or punching them.
Yes. yes.
I would imagine that would make most men wince at the pain just by watching.
Yes, it does.
What is that? I would imagine that would just, most men would pass out from the pain being so extreme. What is it in them that allows them for that to be arousing in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. I mean, did they build a tolerance?
Yeah, he just goes on and on. What is that?
Cut. I get it. He's curious. He doesn't understand.
I get the feeling that this guy loves that shit, and he's dying to know what's, like, wrong,
what's wrong with
him.
I don't know. Every man wonders, like, how is that possible? I think we'd have to interview somebody that's into it. I've never really talked to somebody that's into it to get – how they because they usually say it does hurt. They just how they're able to tolerate it. They build up to it. Why is it arousing? And, you know, arousal through pain, people go, oh, to pain and pleasure are very closely related. Yeah, but in my experience, people that are really into pain had early experiences of pain. They were pretty nasty.
Yeah.
And that's how they kind of get into
it. I must have had a different pain as a kid because I don't like any of that. Like if someone gets aggressive with their fingernails or anything, I'm literally like, this is the opposite of pleasure.
Yes.
I just...
I'm with you.
It dumbfounds me. It's incredible.
It's why you know it's something different they're experiencing, right? Yeah. It's got to be something different. Like, why would that be? And that's why this guy's so incredulous.
Yeah.
Give me one more. Give me a female if you can.
Hey, Hitler. So I've got this weird, I won't even call it a problem.
Okay.
It's just something weird that happens.
I like it when women step on my balls.
My girlfriend and I have like moments where she's crying, like after an argument or anything
aroused.
Like that.
He gets aroused.
I get like, you know, diamond hard boners.
Yep. I've heard of this.
I don't know why. I'm not like you know, a psychopath or anything like that. But why does crying give me?
I'm not a psychopath.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Keep them high and tight. Love the podcast.
Yeah. I don't indulge that experience. It's not a good thing. It is probably we have all sorts of paired arousal experiences from intense experiences in childhood. Like people get intense. Like there's theories about feet and why feet get intense for people. There's theories about seeing somebody cry. It's really probably a traumatic kind of attachment, and trauma and arousal are related. And so you have to kind of, you know, realize this is some piece of me that's not working properly right now.
I'd be interested to know if he saw his like mom cry a lot.
Something like that.
Right.
Yeah. Something like that was intense for him. It's intensity, and intensity and arousal go together after puberty.
What is that thing with moms? Like, how does that, why is that exactly?
I mean, think about
it.
When people go straight up box numbers, 3, 4, 12, you're like, whoa, that's
diamond,
say that.
Diamond hard.
No, what do you mean? What is that thing with moms? Why?
I mean, like, you know, you see, I've been rewatching The Sopranos, which I think is the greatest television series of all time. As I rewatch, it's just absolutely hysterical, yet completely dramatic, enthralling.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Brilliant. And it covers so many things. And obviously him seeing a psychiatrist throughout it, realizing that he's attracted to these women that remind him of his mother, not necessarily physically, but through their actions. And it's so interesting.
So there's
a
lot of things that when we get attached to somebody, right? And when there's a emotional attachment, that has a sort of arousal map associated with it. Like if your mom is, you know, redhead with light skin, you might find you kind of have a, you might move in that direction because you had an intense attachment. That's normal. When it gets abnormal, when your mom was abusive or traumatizing in some way, and that then becomes something you must move towards, even when you can sense, even though you're not consciously aware of it, that it's the kind of person that would engage in a similar kind of relationship with you.
Right.
That's where it gets to be problematic. Otherwise, attachments and the maps that go with those attachments are kind of normal, and you can, and people. Because the way we're wired, men biologically, we routinely override those early maps. You know, we're like, oh, I like that. I like this also.
Right.
You know, people, we have these sexual sort of impulses that override the maps. And the maps can be good. They're guides. Because if you had a great relationship with your mom, that's sort of a good guide, maybe back to a good relationship. If you had a bad one, an intense one, a traumatizing one, for whatever reason, we're still wired that way where that even becomes now more intense.
Right.
And that's where it becomes a problematic thing. So,
so interesting.
I'm sure you've seen lots of that around Youngstown.
You and I should hang out more often.
I'm in. I'll be with you and your NFL friends and private
I
planes.
Love it.
I'm
Let's
going.
Let's go.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Well, I do plan to come to Kill Tony. I'm going to literally rearrange my next trip here to
make
be a
sure
Monday
you're
night.
Here on a Monday night.
Yeah,
yep.
That's what I'm going to do.
Beautiful.
Thank you, my friend.
Indeed.
Good to spend time with you. We'll spend more time, I trust. And very interesting show. And we'll see you all next time.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation of the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast or interaction
on the DrDrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.